Okay, that's the long part of Malachi. Hello, everyone. Let's continue now. Tithe-paying, is it still binding today? Or what are the benefits of paying tithe? Malachi 3:6. We'll go ahead and use the Father's name here. For I am the Yahweh, the Father, and I change not. Therefore, your sons of Jacob are not consumed. Even from the days of your fathers, you are gone away from mine ordinances and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith Yahweh. But you said, wherein shall we return? Will a man rob Yahweh? Yet you have robbed me, but you say, wherein have we robbed thee? And tithes and offering. Your curse is a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithe into the storehouse. That's where present truth is being taught. It says, wherever present truth is being taught, that's where you're to pay your tithe. That there may be meat in mine house, and prove me, and now herewith saith Yahweh, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. For your words have been stout against me, said the Yahweh. Yet you say, what have we spoken so much against thee? Ye have said it is vain to serve the Yahweh. And what profit is it that we have kept his ordinance, and that we have walked mournfully before the Yahweh? And now we call the proud happy, yea, they that work wickedness are set up, yea, they that tempt Yahweh are even delivered. Those who withhold from Yahweh his own make these complaints. For the Yahweh asked them to prove him by bringing their tithe into his storehouse, to see whether he will not pour them out a blessing, but they cherish the rebellion in their hearts and complain of the Yahweh. At the same time, they rob him and embezzle his goods. When their sin is presented before them, they say, I have had adversity, my crops have been poor, but the wicked are prospered. It does not pay to keep the ordinance of the Yahweh, but Yahweh does not want any to walk mournfully before him. So those who thus complain of the Yahweh have brought their adversity on themselves, for they have robbed Yahweh, and his cause has been hindered, because the money that should have flowed into his treasury was used for the selfish purposes. They showed their disloyalty to Yahweh by failing to carry out his prescribed plan. And Yahweh prospered them, and they were asked to give him his portion. They shook their heads and could not see that it was their duty. They closed the eyes of their understanding, that they might not see. They withheld the Yahweh's money and hindered the work which he designed to have done. Yahweh was not honored by the use made of his entrusted gifts. Therefore he let the curse fall upon them, permitting the spoiler to destroy their fruits and to bring calamities upon them. For the consecration unto Yahweh of a tithe of all increase, whether of the orchard and harvest field, the flocks and herds, or the labor of the brain or hand, the decision of a second tithe for the relief of the poor, and other benevolent uses, tended to keep fresh before the people the truth of the Yahweh. Ownership of all, and of their opportunity to be channels of his blessing. It was a training adapted to chill out all nourishing selfishness and to cultivate breadth and nobility of the character. Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour. in the Elgin, Texas. Today is April the 20th, 2023. Or it is if 1-20-27. This is New Moon Sabbath. We're going to start our second, our second service today with a song and then with a prayer, and then we're going to have name of our subject today, or this subject is be Duty to Reprove Sin. And that's on page 265 of volume 3 of the Testimonies by Ellen G. White. Okay, we're on page 265, Duty to Reprove Sin. I have been shown that the Yahweh illustrates how he regards sin among those who profess to be his commandment-keeping people, those whom he has specially honored with the witnessing the remarkable exhibitions of his power, as did the ancient Israel, and who will even then venture to disregard his express direction, will be subject of his wrath. He would teach his people that disobedience and sin are exceedingly offensive unto him and are not to be highly regarded. He shows us that when his people are found in sin, they should at once take decided measures to put that sin from them, that his frown may not rest upon them all. But if the sins of the people are passed over by those in the responsible position, his frown will be upon them, and the people of Yahweh as a body will be held responsible for those sins. In his dealings with his people in the past, Yahweh showed the necessity of the purifying the church from the wrong. One sinner may diffuse darkness that will exclude the light of the Yahweh from the entire congregation. When the people realize that darkness is settling upon them and they do not know the cause, they should seek Yahweh earnestly in the great humility and self-abasement until the wrongs which grieve his spirit are searched out and put away. For the prejudice which has arisen against us because we have reproved the wrong that Yahweh has shown me existed, and the cry that has been raised of the harshness and severity are unjust. Yahweh bids us speak, and we will not be silent. If wrongs are apparent among his people, and if the servants of Yahweh pass over or pass on indifferent unto them, they virtually sustain and justify the sinner, and are alike guilty, and will just as surely receive the displeasure of the Yahweh, for they will be made responsible for the sins of the guilty. In the vision I have been pointed unto many instances where the displeasure of the Yahweh has been incurred by a neglect on the part of his servants to deal with the wrongs and sins existing among them. Those who have exceeded these wrongs have been thought by the people to be very amiable and lovely in the disposition, simply because they shun to discharge a plain scriptural duty. For the talk was not agreeable unto their feelings, therefore they avoided it. For the spirit of the hatred which has existed with some because of the wrongs among Yahweh's people have been reproved, has brought blindness and a fearful deception upon their own soul, making it impossible for them to discriminate between right and wrong. They have put out their own spiritual eyesight. They may witness wrongs, but they do not feel as did Joshua and humble themselves because the danger of the souls is felt by them. For the true people of Yahweh, who have the spirit of the work of the Yeshua and the salvation of the souls at heart, whatever view sin in its real sinful character, they will always be on the side of the faithful and plain dealing with sin, which easily beset the people of Yahweh, especially in the closing work for the church in the sealing time of the 144,000 who are to stand without fault before the throne of Yahweh, though they feel most deeply the wrongs of the Yahweh's professed people. This is forcefully set forth by the prophet's illustration of the last work under the figure of the man each having a slaughter weapon in his hand. One man among them was clothed with the linen, with the writer's ink horn by his side. And Yahweh said unto him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of the Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. Who are standing in the council of the Yahweh at this time? It's a question mark. Is it those who virtually excuse wrongs among the professed people of the Yahweh, and who murmur in their hearts, if not openly, against those who would reprove sin? And folks, I experienced this at Gilead Center that 33 and a half years I was with Brother Stevie Johnson. We started out off on a good note in 1970, and it was pretty good for the first 7 years, even though Brother Johnson made a couple of bad prophecies and moves during that time. He still tried to hold on, but he was not a reprover of sin in his family. He was not a reprover of sin and anybody except one or two people that he thought was in competition against him, and he would point out their sin. Is it those who take their stand against them and sympathize with those who commit wrong? No, indeed, unless they repent and leave the work of Satan in the oppression, those who have the burden of the work and the holding up of the hands of the sinners in Zion, they will never receive the mark of Yahweh's sealing approval. They will fall in the general destruction of the wicked, represented by the work of the five men bearing slaughter weapons. Mark this point with care. Those who receive the pure mark of the truth, wrought in them by the power of the Holy Spirit, represented by a mark by the man in linen, are those that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the church. Their love for the purity and the honor and glory of Yahweh is such, and they have so clear a view of the exceeding sinfulness of sin, that they are represented as being in the agony, even sighing and crying. Read the 9th chapter of Ezekiel. That the general conference Let's reread this again. It says, Mark, this point was terror. We're on page 267, the first paragraph. Those who receive the pure mark of the truth, Lord and them, by the power of the Holy Spirit, represented by the mark, by the man and letter, which is Yahshua, are those that sigh and that cry for all the abomination that is done in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. For their love for the purity and honor and glory of the Yahweh is such, and they have so clear a view of the exceeding sinfulness of the sin that they are represented as being in agony, even sighing and crying. Read the 9th chapter of Ezekiel. Let us continue. But the general thought of all those who do not thus see the wide contrast between sin and righteousness, and do not feel as those do who stand in the council of Yahweh and receive the mark, is described in the order to the five men with the slaughter weapon. Go ye after him through the city and smite. Let not your eyes spare, neither have ye pity. Slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom is a mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Did you know this metaphor Kermit at Kermit, Texas, 2002? That's from Passover to Passover, 2003 to 2003. Those had a whole year to go. The leader of Gilead Synod, where my wife now remembers, we went through this year with them. And it says you start with the ancient men before the house, Ezekiel 9:6. When you start this, and it says judgment must first against the house of Yahweh, 1 Peter 4:17. And the judgment for the Seventh-day Adventist Church for the judgment of the living began at the Passover of 2002 at Kermit, Texas, because Kermit, Texas was the third feeding pastor at Gilead Synod for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And it closed out, the closing work for the Adventist Church closed out by the vote of W. Johnson, Gilead Synod, Kermit, Texas, 2002-2003. And he brought the Adventist movement to an end. Now, when Adventists are taught and they learn this, I've got to go on podcast. I've got to get set up on podcast. I've got to get on probably Twitter. Now, Twitter has been freed up. I'm going to have to get on Twitter. I'm going to have to get me my cameras and get on podcast. I've got to broadcast worldwide every day. And once I get myself completely well, which is not going to take long now because I'm well on the way of restoring myself. It's been a long, arduous journey, but nevertheless, I will be well 100%, and I will be on television, podcasting around the world, and I've got a feeling that I'm going to have to go to Africa, because the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, he's over there going to every nation as fast as he can, sitting on the phone of Sunburst Screen and the Trinity Doctrine of the Catholics, and he's setting all those churches up. And I mean, he's organizing files, and they're all dressed in uniforms, and all the members of those different churches. And he's already invaded the country that I have a church in, that my wife and I have raised up there in Uganda, Africa. We've had a minister there for over 20 years. An Adventist minister that has joined us here, and we sent him the money to build a church with. He built the little church building he built. We had the finances of that too. But nevertheless, it's paid off because he's got faithful members that have joined him. I don't know how many, but He's telling the word, but he's got the opposition over there. Time is here now. It's here. I have a strong feeling that I'm going to end up in Africa sometime. But it'll be after I get completely well and everything restored in my body, then I'm going to go. Go over there and start a revival and reformation there in Africa from south to north. I've got all the armament to do it with. I'm armed with the breastplate of righteousness and the armor of righteousness. I can teach the plan of salvation to build the everlasting covenant. I can teach that in a way that the whole world can understand it and know who Yahshua is and know who Yahweh is and all of that. And how to separate the two in the King KJV, the King James Bible. Oh yeah, we're just beginning. My wife, no doubt, will have to go with me. Because she's a very strong support. She has so much data on everything in her computer that we can set up the whole world. All right, let us continue going here. We're still on page 267, volume 3 of the testimony. It says, in the case of Achan's sin, Yahweh said unto Joshua, neither will I be with you anymore, except you destroy your curse from among you. How does this instance compare with the course pursued by those who will not raise their voice against sin and wrong, but who's sympathetic or ever found with those whose sympathies are ever found with those who trouble the camp of Israel with their sins? Said the Yahweh unto Joshua, thou canst not stand before thine enemies until you take away the accursed thing from among you. He pronounced. Okay, it says, for the punishment which would follow their transgression of his covenant. For the Joshua then began a diligent search to find out the guilty one. He took Israel by their tribes, then by their families, and next individually, and Achan was designated as the guilty one. But that the matter might be plain unto all Israel, that there should be no occasion given to them to murmur and to say that the guiltless was made to suffer, for Joshua used policy. He knew Achan was a transgressor, and that he had concealed his sin and provoked Yahweh against his people. That's the same thing today when you allow people to ramrod over you in the temple that you put in charge of, like I've been put in charge of this temple of Mount Zion at the 12th hour. And you allow anybody to come in teaching anything false and just arrogantly running over you? Well, now we're talking about it right here. Joshua discreetly induced Achan to make confessions of his sin, that the Yahweh's honor and justice might be vindicated before Israel. And Joshua said unto Achan, my son, give out praise thee glory unto the Yahweh, yes, Yahweh of the Israel, and make confession unto him, and tell me now what thou hast done. Hide it not from me. And Achan answered Joshua and said, indeed I have sinned against the Yahweh of Israel, and thus have I done. When I saw among the spoil the goodly Babylonian garment, and 200 shekels of the silver, and a wedge of the gold, and the 50 shekels weight, then I coveted them and took them, and behold, they are hid in the earth, in the midst of my tent, and the silver under it. So Joshua sent messengers, and he ran unto the tent, and behold, it was hid in his tent, and the silver under it. And they took them out of the midst of the tent, and brought them unto Joshua, and unto all of the children of Israel, and laid them out before the Yahweh. And Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan the son of Zerah, and the silver, and the garment, and the wedge of gold, and his sons, and his daughters, and his oxen, and his asses, and his sheep, and his tent, and all that he had. And they brought them unto the valley of Achor. And Joshua said, Why hast thou troubled me? As Yahshua shall trouble thee this day. And all Israel stoned him with the stone, and burned them with the fire, as they had stoned them with the stone. Yahshua told Joshua that Achan had not only taken the things which he had positively charged them not to take, lest they be accursed, but he had stolen and had also dissembled. Yahweh said that Jericho and all of its spoils should be consumed, except the gold and the silver, which were to be reserved for the treasury of the Yahweh. And I'm glad we brought this up about the gold and the silver, because we have access to gold and silver today. And sometimes we're accused of wanting to get rich, because we want silver and gold. Well, we better want it. We're going to have it. I thought that that silver and gold that Achan had stolen, I thought that it had to be done away with too, but not so. This is the victory of taking Jericho was not obtained through the warfare or the exposure of the people. For the captain of the Yahshua of the host, now, this is Yahshua now, the son, had led the armies of heaven. The battle was the Yahshua's. It was he who fought the battle. The children of Israel did not strike a blow, for the victory and glory were the Yahshua, and the spoils were his. For he directed all to be consumed except the gold and silver, which he reserved for his treasury. Achan understood well the reserve made, and that the treasures of the gold and silver which he coveted were the Yahshua's. He stole from the Yahweh's treasury for his own benefits. Okay, that's the end of that subject. A new title is called Covetousness Among Yahweh's People. I saw that many who profess to be keeping the commandments of Yahweh are appropriating to their own use their means, which Yahweh has entrusted unto them, and which should come into his treasury. They rob Yahweh in the tithes and in the offerings. They dissemble and withhold from him unto their own hurt. They bring leanness and poverty upon themselves, and darkness upon the church, because of their covetousness, their dissembling, and their robbing Yahweh in the tithes and in the offering. I saw that many souls will sink in the darkness because of their covetousness. For the plain, straight testimony must live in the church, Well, the Seventh-day Adventist Church is over with, but the living church continues on. And the living church is the house of David, the tribe of Judah, the Mount Zion at the 12th hour. This is that kingdom that Daniel 2, 44 and 45 is talking about. It says, in the days of these kings shall the Yahweh set up a kingdom shall never be destroyed left to other people. But it said it shall strike this image on the feet and grow into a mountain and fill the whole earth. Well, that's who we are, the ever-living church that's moved on from the Seventh-day Adventist church that came to their end in 2003 at Kermit, Texas. The Seventh-day Adventist church is no more in prophecy. There's no more prophecy that covers what she's doing today. For the plain straight testimony must live in the church, or the curse of Yahweh will rest upon his people as surely as it did upon ancient Israel because of their sins. For the Yahweh holds his people as a body responsible for the sins existing in the individuals among them. If the leaders of the church neglect, diligently search out the sins which bring the displeasure of the Yahweh upon the body, they become responsible for these sins. But to deal with the minds is the nicest work in which men ever engage. All are not fitted to correct the errant. They have not the wisdom to deal justly while loving mercy. They are not inclined to see the necessity of meaning love and tender compassion with faithful reproof. Some are ever needlessly severe and do not feel the necessity of the injunction of the apostle, and of some have compassion making a difference, and others save with fear, putting them out of the fire. There are many who do not have the discretion of the Joshua, and who have no special duty for the searching out of the wrong and for the dealing promptly with the sins existing among them. Let not such hinder those who have the burden of this work upon them. Let them not stand in the way of those who have this day this duty to do. Some make it a point to question and doubt and find fault because others do the work that the Yahweh has not laid upon them. These stand directly in the way to hinder those upon whom Yahweh has had the burden of the reproving and correcting the prevailing sins in order that his frown may be turned away from his people. Should a case like the Achans be among us, there are many who would accuse those who might act the part of Joshua in the searching out the wrong and having a wicked fault-finding spirit, for the Yahweh is not to be trifled with and his warnings disregarded with impunity by a perverse people. But this is what I've had all my life since I've been witnessing to the Adventist Church about 1967. I've been witnessing directly to the Adventist Church. When I rejoined the Adventist Church in about 1967, I was shown that the manner of the Achans' confession was similar under the confessions that some among us have made and will make. They hide their wrongs and refuse to make a voluntary confession until Yahweh searches them out, and then they acknowledge their sin. A few persons pass on in a course of the wrong until they become hardened. They may even know that the church is burdened, as the ancient knew that Israel were made weak before their enemies because of his guilt. Yet their consciences do not condemn them. They will not relieve the church by the humbling of their proud, rebellious hearts before the Yahweh and putting away their wrong. Yahweh's displeasure is upon his people, and he will not manifest his power in the midst of them while sins exist among them and are fostered by those in responsible position. Those who work in the fear of the Yahweh to rid the church of this hindrance and to correct grievous wrongs, that the people of Yahweh may see the necessity of the abhorrent sin and may prosper in purity, and that the name of Yahweh may be glorified, will ever meet with the resisting influences from the unconsecrated. For the Zephaniah thus describes the true state of this class and the terrible judgments that will come upon them. And it shall come to pass at that time that I will search Jerusalem and with the candles, and punish the men that are settled on their lees, that say in their heart that the Yahshua will not do good, neither will he do evil. For the great day of the Yahshua is near. Well, if the L.N.G. White felt like it was near 150 years ago or longer, how much closer are we today? Okay, it says the great day is near and hastens greatly, even the voice of the day of the Yahshua. So who's that voice? That's your living witness in the church. That's Elijah David that's speaking to you right now. This is that voice that it's talking about. Even someone with a voice. Even the voice of the day of the Yahshua. The mighty man shall cry there bitterly. That day is a day of the wrath, a day of the trouble and distress, a day of the wasteness and desolation, a day of the darkness and gloominess, a day of the clouds and thick darkness, a day of the trumpet and alarm against the fenced cities and against the high towers, and I will bring distress upon men that they shall walk like blind men because they have sinned against Yahshua, and their blood shall be poured out as the dust, and their flesh as the dung. Neither their silver nor their gold shall be able to deliver them in the day of the Yahshua's wrath, but the whole land shall be destroyed by the fire of his jealousy, so he shall make even a speedy riddance of all them that dwell in the land. That thought, we got a new subtitle here, Confessions Made Too Late. When a crisis finally comes, as it surely will, and Yahweh speaks in behalf of his people, those who have sinned, S-I-N-N-E-D, as a past tense adverb, and the sins are still on their record, those who have been a cloud of the darkness and who have stood directly in the way of the Yahweh's working for His people may be come alarmed at the length they have gone in the murmuring and in the bringing discouragement upon the cause, and like Achan, becoming terrified, they may acknowledge that they have a sin, that their confessions are too late and are not of the right time to benefit themselves, although they may believe the cause of Yahweh. Such do not make their confession because of a conversation
conviction.
Or conviction of their true state and a sense of how displeasing that course has been to Yahweh. Yahweh may give this class another test, another proving, and let them show that they are no better prepared to stand free from all rebellion and sin than before their confessions were made. They are inclined to be ever on the side of wrong, and when the call is made for those who will be on the Yahweh's side to make a decided move to vindicate the right, they will manifest their true position. Those who have been nearly all their lives controlled by a spirit as foreign to the spirit of Yahweh as with Achan's will be very passive when the time comes for a decided action on the part of all. They will not claim to be on either side, for the power of Satan has so long held them that they seem blinded and to have no inclination to stand in the defense of the right. If they do not take a determined course on the wrong side, it is not because they have a clear sense of the right, but because they dare not. Well, let's do this again, this last part of this paragraph. It says, for the power of the Satan has so long held them that they seem blinded and have no inclination to stand in the defense of the right. If they do not take a determined course on the wrong side, it is not because they have a clear sense of the right, but because they dare not. For the Yahweh will not be trifled with. It is in the time of the conflict that the true colors should be flung to the breeze. It is then that the standard bearer need to be firm and let their true position be known. It is then that the skill of every true soldier, not the right, is tested. Shirkers can never wear the laurels of victory. Those who are true and loyal will not conceal the fact, but will put heart and might into the work and venture their all in the struggle. Let the battle turn as it will, for the Yahweh is a sin-hating Yahweh, and those who encourage the sinner saying, "It is well with thee," Yahweh will curse. So confessions of sin made at the right time to relieve the people of Yahweh will be accepted of him. But there are close of those among us who will make confessions, as did the Achan, too late to save themselves. Yahweh may prove them and give them another trial for the sake of evidencing to his people that they will not endure one test, one proving of Yahweh. They are not in the harmony with the right. They despise the straight testimony that reaches the heart and would rejoice to see everyone silenced who gives a reproof. I've been through this already. I had a question asked to me by somebody one day, what constitutes this or that, idolatry, and I told them. They said, "I don't think I want to talk to you anymore. You're too hard. I don't think I want to talk to you anymore," and that person hasn't talked to me anymore. Okay, Elijah reproves Ahab. Okay, we're on 47. We're on page 273. This is our new subtitle. Elijah reproves Ahab. And it says, "The Laodicean Church on top," which is the Adventist Church. So, antiquity, Elijah reproves the Ahab in the Seventh-day Adventist Church today. For the people of Israel had gradually lost their fear and reverence for Yahweh until his words through Joshua had no weight with them. In his Ahab's day, Hiel, the Bethelite, built Jericho. He laid the foundations thereof and Abiram, his firstborn, and set up the gates thereof and his youngest son Segub, according unto the word of Yahshua, which he spake by the Joshua, the son of Nun. While Israel was apostatizing, okay, you might say today in the Antitype, while the Seventh-day Adventist Church is apostatizing, you have the antitypical Elijah on the scene, remaining as a loyal and true prophet of the Yahweh for the Adventist Church. For his faithful soul was greatly distressed as he saw their unbelief and infidelity were fast separating the children of Israel from the Yahweh, and he prayed that the Yahweh would save his people. For he entreated that the Yahshua would not wholly cast away his sinning people, but that he would, by the judgments, if necessary, arouse them to repentance and not permit them to go to still greater lengths in sin and thus provoke him to destroy them as a nation. For the message of Yahweh came unto Elijah to go to Ahab with the denunciation of his judgments because of the sins of the Israel. For the Elijah traveled day and night until he reached the palace of Ahab. He solicited no admission and waited not to be formally announced or unexpectedly to Ahab. Elijah stands before the astonished king of the Samaria in the coarse garments usually worn by the prophets. He makes no apology for his abrupt appearance without the invitation, but raising his hands to heaven, he solemnly affirms by the living Yahweh, who made the heavens and the earth, the judgments which would come upon Israel. There shall not be a dew nor a rain in these 3 years. That's actually 3.5 years. See, there's a misquote right here, see. That was 3.5 years. But according unto my word, for this startling denunciation of Yahweh's judgments because of the sins of Israel felt like a thunderbolt upon the apostle, a king. He seemed to be paralyzed with the amazement and terror, and before he could recover from his astonishment, Elijah, without waiting to see the effect of his message, disappeared as suddenly as he came. His work was to speak the word of the woe from Yahweh, and he instantly withdrew. His word had locked up the treasure of heaven, and his word was the only key which could open them again. But the Yahweh knew that there was no safety for his servant among the children of Israel. He would not trust him with the apostate Israel, but sent him to find an asylum among a heathen nation. He directed him to a woman who was a widow and who was in such poverty that she could barely sustain life with the most meager fare. For a heathen woman living up to the best life she had was in a more acceptable state with Yahweh than the widows of Israel, who had been blessed with special privileges and great light, and yet did not live according to the light which Yahweh had given them. As the Hebrews had rejected light, they were left in the darkness, and Yahweh would not trust his servants among his people, who had provoked his divine anger. Now there is an opportunity for the apostate Ahab and the pagan Jezebel to test the power of their gods and to prove the word of Elijah false. Jezebel's prophets are numbered by the hundreds. Actually, Jezebel's prophets was numbered 400. Against them all stands Elijah. Jezebel had 400 prophets, and Ahab had 450 prophets of Baal. Jezebel had 400 prophets of Ashtoreth. There's a difference. His word has locked heaven. If Baal can give dew and rain and cause vegetation to flourish, if he can cause the brooks and the streams to flow on as usual, independent of the treasures of heaven and the showers of the rain, then let the king of Israel worship him, and the people say that he is God. For the Elijah was a man subject to like passions as ourselves. His mission to Ahab and the terrible denunciation to him of the judgments of Yahweh required courage and faith. On his way to Samaria, the perpetually flowing streams, the hills covered with the verdure, the forest of the stately flourishing trees, everything his eye rested upon, flourishing in the beauty and glory, would naturally suggest unbelief. How can all these things and nature now so flourishing be burned with the drought? How can these streams that water the land and that have never been known to cease their flow become dry? But Elijah did not cherish unbelief. He went forth on the mission at the peril of his life. He fully believed Yahweh would humble his apostate people, and that through the visitation of his judgment, he would bring them to humiliation and repentance. He ventured everything in the mission before him. When Ahab recovers in a degree from his astonishment at the words of Elijah, the prophet is gone. He makes the diligent inquiry for him, but no one has seen him or can give any information respecting him. Ahab informs Jezebel of the word of woe that Elijah has uttered in his presence, and her hatred against the prophet is expressed for the priest of Baal, to the priest of Baal, for they unite with her in the denouncing and cursing the prophet of the Yahweh. For the news of the prophet's denunciation spread throughout the land, arousing the fears of some and the wrath of many. Okay. After a few months, the earth refreshed by the dew or rain becomes dry, and vegetation withers, for the streams that have never been known to cease that flow decrease, and the brooks dry up, for the Jezebel's prophets offer the sacrifices to their gods and call upon them night and day for the refreshing of the earth by the dew and the rain. Verily, the incantations and the deceptions formerly practiced by them for the deceiving of the people do not answer the purpose now, for the priests have done everything to appease the anger of their gods with a perseverance and zeal worthy of a better cause have they lingered around their pagan altar, while the flames of the sacrifice burn on all the high places, and the fearful cries and entreaties of the priests of the Baal are heard night after night through the doomed Samaria, but the clouds do not appear in the heavens to cut off the burning rays of the sun. For the word of the Elijah stands firm, and nothing that Baal's priest can do will change it. Okay, well, this is the same thing that's going on with the Adventist Church. Those false prophets of Samaria, of Ahab and Jezebel, they represent the false ministers in the Seventh-day Adventist Church today, or did. But the Adventist Church, they have been through now since 2003. They no longer have a cause in the earth. So that's the reason why the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, Ted Wilson, has the freedom now to take his crew and go to any nation he wants to and set up sun worshiping and the Trinity doctrine and all the Adventist churches, unrebuffed and unrestrained. This means the Third West Business Hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. And that number, let me click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.
I am thankful, Yahweh, heard God's voice, and it told Thou of love to me. But I long to rise in the arms of faith and be closer drawn to Thee. Draw me near, blessed young, to the cross where Thou hast died. Draw me near, blessed young, to the precious bleeding side. Consecrate me now to the service, young, for the power of grace divine. Let my soul look up with the steadfast hope, and my will be lost in Thine. Draw me near, blessed Yah, to the cross where Thou hast died. Draw me near, blessed Yah, to Thy precious bleeding side. Oh, the pure delight of the single love that before Thy throne I stand. When I kneel in prayer and with Thee, Maria, I commune as friend with friend. Draw me near, blessed Yah, to the cross where Thou hast died. Draw me near, blessed Yah, to the precious living side. There are depths of love that I cannot know till I cross the narrow sea. There are heights of joy that I may not reach till I rest in peace with Thee. Draw me near, blessed Yah, to cross where Thou hast died. Draw me near, blessed Yah, to Thy precious bleeding side.